is to get involved at the local level, because when it comes to November, I have less than 100 days to figure out how I'm going to vote, and I will vote with my conscience. That's what people need to do. But in the meantime, if you feel like your vote can't make a difference, you can make a difference in your community.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being here and for doing the work you're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Take good care, and we shall be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel.
Positively revolting as ever.
And we hope you are too.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. A talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor of conservation biology and an author. He'll present his synthesis of the current peer-reviewed research on Earth's recent phase of rapid warming. Again, that's Abrupt Climate Change, a talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:01 a.m. coming up on Waterworld. Kristen Yount speaks with, well, we got more on the Portland Harbor Superfund site. At 10, we'll hear Flashpoints, featuring excerpts from the latest film by Michael Moore, Where to Invade Next. And at 11 on the Radio Zine, Kathleen Stevenson speaks with photojournalist and author Dina Stryker about her book, Cuba, A Diary of the Revolution, Inside the Cuban Revolution with Fidel Raúl Shay and Celia Sanchez. And thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not currently a member, you can become one. Yes, remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. Click where it says donate.
Welcome, KBOO listeners, to another edition of Waterworld. I'm Kristen Yount. This program is dedicated to discovering water policy all over the world. I have to admit that I'm seriously preoccupied with the Portland Harbor Superfund site. That is the 11-mile stretch of river from the Broadway Bridge all the way up to just before the confluence of the Willamette and the Columbia. The river has many hot spots that have been correlated with various industries along the waterfront. So it's pretty clear which businesses have released which pollutants into the river. So the EPA Superfund plan has been released in June. The plan has put tears in the eyes of stakeholders and joy in the hearts of the corporate shareholders. It's a very weak plan, so weak in fact that the Yakama Nation Fisheries and other tribal affiliates sent a delegation to Washington, D.C. to address EPA Chief Gina McCarthy directly. We'll be speaking with Laura Shiva, who works with the Yakama Tribal Fisheries, as she was there. But now I have here in the studio with me Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group Vice Chair Jackie Calder, and hopefully we'll have a Portland Harbor Community Coalition organizer here as well. So Jackie, welcome to KBOO again. Thank you for being here, and thank you for the work you do for us.
I love it. I'm so passionate. Anybody that hears me talk say, oh, we love your passion, because I've worked on it a long time. 14 years is a long time to be on one project and trying to get it done. Lots of it was really slow because the industry drug their feet and they had a problem getting their FS together, and it was highly technical and hard for people to read. But the EPA corrected a lot of that, and they kept telling us, wait for the proposed plan, wait for the proposed plan. And then it was really sad that they kept telling us they were bringing in this level of E plus, which was a lot of dredging and some capping and some monitored natural recovery, but not the level that they finally ended up with. They ended up with level I, which was so disgusting. It means that they were only going to dredge 167 acres, and that's just pitiful. That's just not enough. It won't clean up the fish. The fish will still not be edible. The river just will not be clean. They're talking about enhanced monitored natural recovery, which is where they throw sand down and then wait for the river to clean it up. And that's just not even logical. If the river was going to clean it up in the last 50 years, it would have done so. And it just hasn't.
Yeah. So throw a little sand, a little activated charcoal on it, and cross your fingers and hope for the best is the solution. They have come up with 92% of the damaged river. I just want to back up and let our listeners know that we are talking about the Portland Harbor CERCLA or Superfund site. It was declared a priority in 2000. The process has been going on for 16 years. We are right about three quarters or two thirds of the way through the comment period. So, Jackie, if people want to make a public comment about the quality of their river, how can they do that?
They can go to a couple of websites. The best one is www.cleanupportlandharbor.org, and that gives you an opportunity to read some of the information that Yakama Nation has put forth, but you can also add your own personal, and we highly recommend that you personalize this by telling them that you want more dredging, that you want a cleaner river. We want the river, we want the fish edible, because right as they have planned it, the fish will not be edible and cannot be edible even on completion after 30 years, I think the Yakama Nation said.
Yep. So we have on the phone right now Laura Shiva with the Yakama Fisheries, and she is going to talk about the delegation that went to Washington, D.C. But Laura, I would like it if you could just explain to our listeners what your role is in the organization, and talk about why there's so much focus on what the tribal governments have to say about this project.
Well, sure. Hi there. It's Laura Shira, and I'm the environmental engineer working with Yakima Nation Fisheries. There's a group of three of us, and we have a consultant as well, working on reviewing the proposed plan and associated documents to make sure that the science makes sense, which we don't think it does in a lot of cases. And then also to try to bring to the table our treaty authorities that are often ignored at a lot of sites, and in hopes that maybe the treaty authorities can help advance this. The politics coming from industry and the money and the lobbyist power that's coming from that side has really moved the dial for EPA's decision on this proposed plan in a less protective way, and so we're hoping to maybe move that back a little bit. But on July 25th, we asked for a meeting with Gina McCarthy in Washington, D.C. Gina McCarthy is the presidential appointee administrator for EPA, so she's the head honcho. And we met with her and several of her staff, key staff members, and they were very gracious. It was a very good and a very respectful meeting. We brought to the table some of our key asks, but we really decided to try to focus on what are our treaty rights, how are they related to Portland Harbor when our reservation is way over here by Yakima, and what's the history and personal connections that make us interested in this area. And because I think a lot of government officials and just people who aren't from the tribe don't understand that. And so it was our delegation, our leadership that went, included Delano Saluskin, who's the vice chairman, Jerry Lewis and Virgil Lewis, and Davis Washines, who are tribal council and general council members. And they did a great job at trying to help teach in a very respectful and personalized way why the Yakima have a very long and historical interest in that area, and how that relates to our treaty rights is really wonderful. Davis Washines talked about some of the census records that went back to Fort Vancouver and other areas there where his family, the Yellowash, were recorded in that area as part of the census. They all talked about how in their youth they went to collect the lamprey up at Willamette Falls and their trips to that area to visit other tribal members. They talked about, Davis talked about his grandfather who was arrested for fishing in that area. Our fishing rights for Zone 6 are in the Columbia River below where Willamette dumped out into the Columbia River, and I think we've talked about this before, but the toxic sediment load from Portland Harbor is dumping into the Columbia River, so we're very interested in the health of the salmon, and we are seeing a difference in juvenile salmon body burden of they're picking up low levels of the contamination, and that's a huge concern to us. So it was a really wonderful conversation, and I think very moving, well received. But at the same time, there were no promises made on behalf of the EPA, and so we were encouraged to submit our technical comments. And we'll definitely do that. We'll submit both our technical comments, and I think we'll also focus on this background of Yakima's history in that area and Yakima's future in that area. Yakima have been here for thousands of years, and will continue to be here long past when all these industries come and go. And so this is we're very interested in the health of the river, the health of the aquatic species, and the health of our people, as well as the others that live around Portland Harbor.
Yeah, so thank you so much for that report. It sounds it sounds frustrating to go all the way to DC just to, you know, even though it was well received, to not get really any feedback from the head honcho, except for, you know, make your comment. The proposed plan, if anyone should like to read it, is on the EPA's website. The easiest way to find it is to just simply search for EPA and proposed plan and Region 10 in your browser, because if you try to go to the EPA's website directly, it's sort of confusing. It's Region 10, and it's the Portland Harbor. And if you look for the proposed plan, you might find a fact sheet, which is, you know, pretty informative. But one could always look at the proposed plan itself. It's a PDF. It's about 140 pages long. It's not. I mean, I don't have a science. I don't have a master's degree in science or anything like that. But just from reading the first 50 pages of the plan, it's pretty easy for even a layperson to see that the wording is flawed. The plan is flawed. It is not protective of human health. It just, in my layperson's opinion, I will be writing a comment about the shoddy work and a proposed plan that is protective of profits rather than human health. And so, which is kind of ridiculous. We were supposed to have someone from the PHCC here, that's the Portland Harbor Community Coalition, who is going to talk about how much of an economic benefit a good plan with lots of, a lot of technology going into cleaning up the river would create an economic benefit and jobs for community people. So
the city survey showed that for every dollar spent in the Superfund, there was a dollar returned. But if you examine the results after most Superfund sites, the increase in economic benefits are just huge. And if you do a proper job of cleanup and do restoration like you should properly, then your results will benefit people much more than if you just leave it dirty and not really perform it, you know, clean it up properly.
And there's proof of that. If you go to the University of Portland, and if you can get down to the river, I don't know if you can see it from University of Portland, but behind University of Portland in the Overlook neighborhood on the riverbank, you can see where there's already been some work done to restore the shoreline, and there's a cap. Capping some sediment, and you can see it, and you can see that there it will be pretty straightforward to rebuild the riparian zone there and put some plants in and make it look like a natural healthy river. It's to restore that area, and that's the plan. So if anyone is curious about what that looks like, there is already a little piece of it done, and it's a tiny piece of the entire project, but it made me feel better to see that. It's like,
also there's McCormick and Baxter to look at. They did a major cap at that creosote plant that was just huge. They excavated 32 acres of creosote laden sand and dirt and moved it up to Wasco, which is a facility, a proper disposal facility for getting rid of that type of contaminant. And then what they did is they armored the layering, and they also put 32 acres of clean sand back in there. The one mistake they made was that they used too much sand along the river, because the river riparian area was highly damaged also. And what they did was they put sand there, and they had to go back and put gravel, which is much more conducive for habitat for salmon and juveniles and all of the growing fish. And so, I mean, McCormick and Baxter has plantings that have grown. It was done way back in 2006. They thought they were going to spend $20 million, and the federal government came in and thought they were going to, thought $20 million would do it. The total ended up being $44 million, and that's just that one small section.
And so they're suggesting about $700 million for the whole site, which is how many more times larger than that little site?
Yeah, there's 11 miles or 10.8 miles of contamination, and some are worse than others. Gasco area has a huge tar body. Arkema's been a Superfund site in itself. It originally had hexavalent chromium, which are DEQ corrected, but they also had jet fuel. They had DDT. They have herbicides, pesticides that were just entrenched. There's so much salt at the base of the Arkema site that the fish can't even exist there right now. And when they tell you that you can fish, that you can swim everywhere in the river, that's somewhere you do not want to swim. That area is, you know, could make you very sick. They say PAHs, Oregon State says PAHs can make you have rashes and all kinds of nasty things on your skin if you swim there. So you want to be careful. We enjoyed the big float this year, but it was further upstream where the water is cleaner and a lot better. But downstream, no, you don't want to swim there.
Yeah, and our river flows from south to north, the Willamette, and it also has countercurrents. So near the top of the river will be going north, and the underneath currents will be traveling south. So, you know, the water just isn't always going downstream. So you want to keep in mind that, you know, the Superfund site is, you know, has a demarcation at the Broadway Bridge, but the water does flow back. And some stuff goes with it, too. So
yeah, it's dynamic. It also has tidal influences that are, you know, really change the disposition of the river.
All the time. Like twice a day, right? Like the tides.
Yes, and absolutely.
Also with the way that the water line recedes and rises, you know, you're going to have this pollutants depositing on the shoreline as well and becoming airborne perhaps. So I think that you know, what do you want to see happen, Jackie, with the...
Well, there's a number of things. Of course, we want to see as much... first of all, the proposed plan only didn't even designate to clean up the complete principal threat waste, which is EPA's definition of the worst and the most contaminated areas. They're not even going to completely remove that, which I thought was just, that's just disgraceful. But, and they need to do that. They definitely need to do that. But they need to go beyond that as well by, and addressing, like, there's areas that are called hotspots that are just the worst, like River Mile 11, which is part of the city's area, has the worst PCBs in the area, and PCBs are cancer-causing. The worst is endocrine disruptors, which cause children's developmental, you know, it retards development. It also... ruins reproductive cycles. It also can damage the immune system. PCBs are not a pretty picture, and they need to seriously remove them. in a sense, EPA is yielding to the powers that be in the sense that they didn't want to ask for the most expensive cleanup, but they're not even asking for what's adequate. Like I said before, the fish won't even be edible. You won't even be able to swim in all of it. And when it is removed, it needs to be taken to a proper facility. They originally surmised that they were going to put it in a confined disposal facility, which is in slip 3 of terminal 4, and just dump some low-level contamination in there. Well, now they're not even going to have any low-level contamination that they're dredging to put in there. So I don't know. The irony is, well, you know, what are you going to put in there? Are you going to put the worst? And they've assured us for years and years and years that what went into that toxic waste dump, the confined disposal facility in slip 3, was going to be the lowest level of contamination. And now the only thing that could go in there is the worst. And that's just sick. That's just sad. So, I mean, not that we're not happy to see the CDF go, but it's kind of ironic that the reason we don't get it is because they're not going to clean it up enough. When they do remove it, we want them to take it to either the Wasco facility or the Roosevelt facility. And they have excellent housing. They've got 300 feet deep underneath the very well lined container, and it would be a good choice during the cleanup. While they're dredging and digging and doing all that, they need to monitor the air and the water so that when air volatilization occurs, which happens with PCBs, then they will know and can stop the dredging and can stop, if they create a problem in the air or in the water, that they can stop the construction and wait until they get figured out what could go forward properly. And most important, really, is that we want the fish to be healthy, and not just because we want to be able to eat fish, although we've been able to eat the fish out of this river for thousands of years. It's just sad that you can't eat lamprey anymore when it's Yakima's, it's part of their tradition. It's part of their religion, so to speak, to eat lamprey and have lamprey as part of their festivals.
Yeah.
But the healthy fish isn't just so we can eat them. They represent keystone items that mean that the river's cleaner and that the river has actually reached a level of health. And why people don't think of their health, I mean, it's sort of how I've been thinking of it for a long time, and that's preventative medicine. I mean, why do we want to, you know, wait for the cancer-causing, endocrine-disrupting river to make everybody sick when, in fact, if they cleaned it all up, they could prevent all that, and you wouldn't be paying doctor bills or prescriptions or trying to cure, you know, all the cancer that erupts from the unhealth of PCBs, PAHs, and DDTs. I mean, it's just too logical. It just makes too much sense to clean up the fish, clean up the river, and save yourself some health bills. What a thought.
So are you still there, Laura?
I am.
Okay. I didn't mean to... it's okay. Jackie's looking at me like, whoops, no. But I wanted to see if you had anything to add to that as a stakeholder. And, I personally think that the city of Portland owes Yakima Nation a great debt because there's been a very strong voice in advocating for the river. And, you know, if no one else is going to say it, I'll say it, you know, and I just wanted to know if there's anything, you know, that listeners can do to help Yakima and the CAG advocate for a cleaner river, what would you suggest?
Well, I think the biggest thing that people can do is just to make comments and make personalized comments. That website, www.cleanupportlandharbor.org, is a really fast and simple way to do that. It's got a basic message on there, but then a space for you to, you know, say what the river means to you, or if something that you've read or that we've said or others have said resonates with you, to comment on that. But I think any way in which you can participate, small or large, is wonderful. And it does make a difference. Numbers do matter. And we've been told that by EPA as well. I think, you know, industry's had 16 years during the investigation to spend lots of money on their lobbyists. And we're just, you know, we got this proposed plan on June 8th, and now we're starting up. So we've got had a lot less time than them. So it's really important that people speak up now before the September 6th deadline. Do it today.
Why not? Do it right now.
What's that?
Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to go back to the economic benefits. The city of Portland did that study where more than a dollar is returned on every dollar spent on cleanup. And a similar study was done in the state of Washington by Department of Ecology that showed that more than a dollar is returned on every dollar spent on cleanup, which is wonderful. Because one thing that's really frustrating from a cleanup point of view is there's this whole cost-benefit analysis, which is done as part of the evaluation, and that is really, really what industry is hanging their hat on for Portland Harbor. But that cost and benefit analysis does not include the benefits of what a cleanup does in terms of generating jobs, in terms of it increasing property values, in terms of increasing the health and of both the ecosystem and the people, which is harder to measure. It also increases recreation and tourism in a lot of cases. It's one of these things that there's been lots of economic studies, and that whole science of economic studies has really advanced in the past couple of decades, and it's just proven over and over again that these cleanups really do help the economy. And one thing that they actually do for industry is a lot of industries who have polluted properties, it's hard for them to get loans, it's hard for them to sell their properties, and then these properties go derelict, or they're just, you know, they fall in disrepair because they can't make the investments that they need to if they need loans. And the reason why they can't get those loans is because a bank doesn't want to invest in a big unknown of a contaminated property that could potentially cause those landowners to go bankrupt. And so it has a lot of benefits to industry as well, to be cleaning up these properties in the river. And just in comparison, Jackie, you were talking about McCormick and Baxter. They cleaned up 23 acres of river sediment there. And, you know, Portland Harbor is 2,167 acres. So, you know, 100 times bigger, at just a fraction of the cost when you look at it proportionally. The Duwamish River is a big cleanup project that they released their proposed plan and then their record of decision, finalizing that decision in the past year or so. And that's a 177-acre sediment cleanup. So Portland Harbor is, you know, more than 10 times bigger. It's a $342 million cleanup. So just a fraction, you know, Portland Harbor is just a fraction of the cost of these when you look at a per acre cost. You know, Portland Harbor is a deal.
Yeah.
So
no kidding.
It doesn't even compare to the cost per acre at these other sites. And it's 155 polluters. The responsible parties, whether they polluted it themselves or maybe they just have inherited the liability over time. A lot of these companies want to do the right thing, and insurance makes it harder for them to do the right thing. And there's a whole realm of the intentions of the players here. But there's a lot of scare tactics being used on the part of industry and the city and the port that this is just way too much. It'll hurt the economy. It'll hurt every citizen. And I'd just like to point out, this is bigger. This is a lot bigger. If you divided this up into individual Superfund sites, which this could easily be divided up into multiple Superfund sites and then non-Superfund sites, it would be so much more expensive to clean up that way. And, you know, EPA did a very smart thing by trying to look at the 10 miles holistically, but what that did was that united and enabled industry to lobby and to lobby very powerfully against anything that's too costly, you know, wherever they have decided to draw the line. Yes. And that they've been successful in pushing EPA to a cheaper price, and then EPA's really scrambled in a not so scientifically supported way to meet that dollar amount.
Yeah, you're so right about comparing us to the Duwamish in the sense that the more commenting they got, the better their cleanup was. They were able to increase their dredging by 25% through increased comments. After the comment period was completed, the EPA pushed up the dredging amount. So it's very worth your effort to comment personally, comment often. And that's really the best way to move the needle towards getting a better cleanup for our Portland Harbor.
Yeah, and I just like to point out some of the things that we brought forth to EPA. Would that be all right?
Yeah, I just want to jump in and say that if people want to call in, if they have a question for Laura or a question for Jackie, I want to just say that I did call Steve Novick's office and I did ask them to speak on this issue, because I know that he has had some opinions in the past about this project, and I wanted to ask him if he's reformed his opinion. Again, they did not respond. So I know that there's a caller who calls in and always asks about what's going on with Mr. Novick, and unfortunately I wasn't able to find that out. But if you'd like to call and make a comment, I'd really love to hear if you have made your comment on the Superfund to the EPA. And you can call 503-231-8187. 8187, and we'll take your call on the air. So, going back to you, Laura, what did you want to say about what you brought to the EPA?
Yeah, so during that July 25th meeting that we had with that our Yakima Nation leadership had with Gina McCarthy, who's the administrator for EPA in Washington D.C., we brought forth an ask, and that ask included, instead of I, we would like them to implement the alternative G cleanup standards, which still don't get you to clean, but get you a lot closer to clean. Alternative I has these ridiculously high concentrations that they can leave in place in certain areas, and in areas that are actually higher habitat value, in areas where people use the beaches. So it leaves behind a lot of contamination that is not protective of aquatic or the environment or the people. So beyond Alt-G, we're saying we'd like some modifications to that Alt-G. We want a cleanup that results in fish that are clean, healthy, and safe to eat. The whole idea of a restoration time frame of 30 years from the start of cleanup to when they think they'll be able to lift fish consumption advisories is just, it's not supported by science. It's a best professional judgment. They had to throw out their model if they actually think it would be achievable. And so by doing Alt-G, we think that it would at least be hopefully more attainable to get to some kind of safe and healthy fish to eat. Telling women of childbearing age that they can absolutely not eat any fish for the next 3 decades and most likely longer is just not acceptable. We do absolutely want the Columbia River protected. Those sediments are currently being scoured out into the Columbia River, and with the majority of the site not being dredged, not being removed, when 100% of the site area is actually toxic sediment-wise, you're going to get a lot of scouring of those sediments loading into the Columbia River. And so we want to prevent that release of contaminated sediments into the Columbia River. We want them to take a bigger bite out of those hot spots. We want a contingency plan, since this is based on who knows what, best professional judgment without any model or science to back it up. We really want them to have a timeline, say, really good monitoring that shows, you know, within 10 years after cleanup, is it trending in the right direction? Is it even trending in a right, in a good way? Are there problems and need to step in and do more? We want them to protect shorelines and near shore habitat. The riverbank and groundwater cleanups leave huge percentages of those toxic groundwater plumes that are feeding into the river and shorelines just unaddressed. And it is unstated and not specific, but possibly implied that some of that might be addressed during the state's cleanups, but it is not specific as to whether the Portland Harbor cleanup standards will apply to that, how it will be done. We just have, it's completely unclear in the proposed plan what's going to happen with groundwater and riverbanks in a lot of areas. And we want the beaches, the higher habitat, higher value habitat areas, especially more protected. We want the benthic, all the little bugs and critters at the bottom, who are the most exposed, and they're the base of the food chain. They're why the fish are toxic to us to eat, to be protected. An institutional control will not help the critters in the river. We want a realistic evaluation of the upland source control. Right now, the state has summarized that, but they've only summarized their sites, not the sites managed by the port or the city or the DOT, you know, other entities. And it's a summary, but it's actually not that informative. There's several federal sites that are just they won't even move forward on doing an investigation, and who has the authority to make them move forward? There's lots of railroad areas that haven't even been investigated. And so there's a lot of screaming holes in that upland source control, and there's no evaluation of that within the proposed plan, and that needs to be in there. We want all the really high-level waste removed. The EPA calls that principal threat waste. Those are that's the hot spot stuff that if it was dug up, it couldn't just go in any landfill. It'd have to go in a special one. And so why would we ever leave that in the river, even under a cap that, you know, could potentially be damaged with a high flood event or an earthquake or something like that. We want it to comply with the regulations. That's one of the basic requirements of the Superfund law, is that it complies with both state and federal and all the applicable regulations, and it doesn't even meet the Oregon State water quality standards and the level of protectiveness of 10 to the minus 6 risk. The proposed plan does not have clear metrics, and so if it's not cleaning up or if it's not being fully protective for sediment or groundwater or surface water, it doesn't really say you have to meet this criteria in this spot or, you know, in this area. It's not clear. And so if it's not going well later on, it would just leave it open for a lot of argument and litigation by not having clear metrics for what is acceptable and what is not acceptable after the cleanup and later on. We want them to include language on Yakima's role in oversight of the cleanup. We do have that authority. And then we also are very hesitant and do not, EPA has talked about handing over oversight of the cleanup to the Oregon State, and we are opposed to that.
DEQ actually has been working on since the beginning. They've been working on upland cleanup since for 15 years, and they've worked very hard and very diligently. But what we can say about that is we know they don't have the power, the manpower, the funding to do the actual cleanup that needs to be done. Their objective was always not necessarily to mitigate the contamination of the uplands, but we were always told it was simply to prevent the contamination from flowing into the river. And to accomplish an effective upland control, which was their original goal, we need to actually remediate what's in the uplands. I mean, you can't just build a wall and hope it's going to work. They've built walls and found that one of the problems is these walls that they built was that they're not going clear down to the very bottom of the river, that there's stuff that can flow underneath it. So they're, I mean, you can't just stop contamination from flowing into the river. You actually have to do something about it, correct it, remove it, countermand it in some way to actually do a cleanup. That's just my thoughts on how DEQ's been working. The other thing about EPA is that they're actually not even following CERCLA law. They do have metrics as far as the level of what is clean water, but what they're saying is that if they choose to waiver it, they can waiver it, that they don't even have to abide by that. And that's not having a rule that they can waiver. Just, I mean, that's not a cleanup. It's been, I wanted to talk about the city a little bit because the city has a dichotomous position in the fact that they were both a PRP and an entity that represents all the people of the city. But from the beginning, it has leaned towards the polluter side and in defending itself. For years, they sat behind closed doors and nothing was transparent between what they talked about with EPA. I mean, a lack of transparency for 10 years just really, it really doesn't say much. They need to change that. I know that some of the offices, I know Amanda Fish, I know
Amanda Fritz and Nick Fish.
And Nick Fish have been making some real strides towards reaching out to the public and listening to the public. But one of the things that I have a real problem with is between industry and EPA and the city and everybody, they forget who the river really belongs to. And it doesn't belong to the city or the state land board or the EPA or the industrial complex who dumped the nastiest, dirtiest, cancer-causing, reproductive system-disrupting chemicals from their collection of operational fluids into the river. The river belongs to the people through the public trust doctrine, as does all rivers in Oregon. They are our rivers. That's why we have a say-so. What? That's why it's so important that we ask for the best cleanup possible in our river.
Yeah, that was good. Jackie's smiling. She really wanted to get that off her chest.
Yeah, that was my rant for the day. For the most part, industry has served us well, but it defeats its own purpose, giving people jobs near water that'll make them and the public ill, as well as the legacy in the water that people of Portland may need someday. How do you solve problems that occur in business? Do you deny the problems? Do you run away from them? Do you use the cheapest solution possible and then hope it clears cures itself? No. Polluters need to do their cleanup. Clean up the mess they left in the river. Correct their bad habits, become a cleaner, better neighbor, and move on. They need to quit hiding behind the legalese that says, this contamination is old. It wasn't ever ours. Or, we can't afford to clean it up. Or worst of all, when we heard them say we'd rather pay $2 billion in attorney's fees to get out of it than actually cleaning it up. Granted, the city is bowing to the industries who gives us many jobs, but if the company and or the job creates an unhealthy river that is like shooting yourself in the foot, why not recognize the cleanup for the preventative medicine that it is? And I think I talked about that before. I mean, before you let it all go to hospital costs and prescription bills and doctor's charges, you should clean it up and prevent all the cancer, prevent all the reproductive problems, and prevent the immune system disorders, and in babies who get stunted development. I mean, those charges in the doctor's office for the cancer that PCBs, PAHs, and DDT cause can't be cheap.
No.
Or healthy.
No.
No.
Yeah. Well, I'm hesitant to bring this up, but when you read the proposed plan, in the beginning, it talks about some remediation that was started on with Arkema, and how I just wondered if you would want to talk about what happened there.
DEQ talked about it several times. There's actually been four iterations of cleaning up Arkema. The first thing they had to clean up was the ugly hexavalent chromium, which they found that they did. Well, it's not going into the river anymore. I mean, I'm not sure that it's not doesn't still exist there. And, of course, the jet fuel. But they went through three or four iterations of cleaning it up, from doing pump and treat wells to doing organoclay in sort of snaking ditches. And now they've finally got a treatment plant. And the treatment plant, for the most part, its intention or its goal is to convert the bad chemicals into something more benign. I'm not sure about your questions other than that.
Oh, just I know that they sued the EPA. They wanted to put in a toxic waste dump on their site, and as part of their remediation plan. It sounded like they wanted to put a toxic waste dump on their site, and they have to be allowed to. We have a caller. Oh, so great. Saved by the caller. Hello, caller.
Hey, I appreciate the fact that you folks are really trying to do something good, but in order to get this done the proper way, they would have to start way upstream, up somewhere around Eugene, and I'm not that familiar with the Willamette River as I probably should be. But I know downstream from there at Albany, they had Teledyne Huacheng, which is a place very similar to Precision Cast Parts in their use of toxic substances. I know that they've got, or at least they used to have, a low-level radioactive sand that they use in their casting of their parts that they make that was within flood reach of the Willamette River if the Willamette flooded too much. But then you also have all the paper mills along the way. You had two right in Oregon City, West Linn area there at the falls. Crown Zeller back on the Willamette Falls side, or on the West Linn side, and then Times Mirror, or whatever you want to call it, Publishers Paper, it changed names over the years. But I know people that used to go down there and party on their boats down below the falls at night, and they said if you turned on a like their floodlight on a Saturday night, that's when one of the paper mills would be dumping out this murky-looking, nasty-looking stuff that made a plume about 12 feet wide and about, you know, many miles long. But one of the people there on the boat one night said, "What's that in the water?" And they shined the light, and it was just like this big, long ribbon of a very dark, murky-looking pollutant that they were discharging on a Saturday night. But not only that, but you have all of the water treatment plants for the sewer that, you know, the sanitary sewer that goes into the river so it's treated. But from my understanding is that pharmaceuticals that people take, like, say, all the people down at the Oregon State Mental Hospital that are on Thorazine.
Okay. All right. I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you right there, because actually part of this EPA study was to take a baseline. So they actually measured the contaminants that were in the river upstream. So, you know, there's a baseline that of the entire river, right, from the falls, I believe, up to where the Superfund site begins. And that's sort of like the baseline of the water coming into that mile, that first mile marker at the Broadway Bridge. And so just the whole point of the plan is to get this part of the river, the Superfund, 10.8 miles, to the point where it is equal to the baseline coming in. Like, it's, you know, you're right, it's going to still have some of that stuff coming in, but it's not the high levels of PCBs. I'll just turn this over to Jackie now, because,
well, it's like everything. It's like everything. The EPA, when they were studying this, started with 6 mile, a focus of 6 miles, and then expanded it to almost 11. And it's the way you start everything, one step at a time. And when I went to the Yakima's meeting that I hadn't been to before, one of the things they said, well, we're going to start here in this 11 miles, because DEQ, who has jurisdiction all over the state and measures water quality all over the state, said this was the worst. And so if we start here and begin here and work real hard here to get this cleaned up, then, like Yakima says, then you take a perspective on the entire Willamette watershed and try to get it cleaned up. It's the beginning of a large goal. And then from the Willamette watershed, you move to the Columbia watershed, which is huge. But at the same time, you start that mile with the first step. And this is our first step, because when DEQ and EPA looked at it, this was the worst area. And as far as sewerage is really bad. And we know it is. That's why they spent $1.5 billion on the big pipe. Certainly the chemicals in this water deserves at least that, but the big pipe took $1.5 billion, and they've done a lot of corrections for, like, the paper mills and that sort of thing. There's been a lot of changes as far as the laws and the ruling, and the sewerage too, it needs to be addressed and prevented from going into the river. But at the same time, this is where we're starting. This is our beginning. And I think it's so good for you and for the Yakima Nation to have this broad perspective that in the long run, we want to do it all.
So just to remind everybody, you're listening to Water World. I'm Kristen Yount. This is Jackie Calder from the Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group. And we have Laura Shira on the phone from Yakima Fisheries, and I thank you so much for being here, Laura. Thank you for being here, Jackie. We have a little bit more time. Laura, is there anything that you want to say just to wrap up?
No, I just really appreciate the time to be on here. I want to encourage people to make their comments big or small, but personalize whatever you can say about what the river means to you or something that resonated with you in this conversation. The website to go to, or one website to go to, is www.cleanupportlandharbor.com.
Dot org.
Yeah. www.cleanupportlandharbor.org. Yakima Nation is really interested in cleaning up Willamette, the Willamette River, Portland Harbor area. It is, like Jackie said, much, much higher than background coming in, and And not only do we want to clean up Portland Harbor, but we would like a regional approach. And we've begun discussions with that, with EPA and DEQ, and they are working on those things. And, you know, we can't paralyze ourselves by saying that someone else has to do their work first. We all have to start. We all have to do our part. We all have to do it now. And each incremental step that we make will make a difference. And Portland Harbor cleaning that up would be a huge, huge difference to both the health of the Willamette River and the Columbia River.
Absolutely. Your voice counts. Make your voice heard. That is the most important thing you can do, is make a comment to cleanupportlandharbor.org. Just tell them what you think. Tell them that, you know, we want to be able to eat our fish. We want to be able to swim. We want to be able to play on the beaches and not have concern about our children picking up a rock that might be
hot.
It'd be terrible, be infested with chemicals that'll make them sick. I mean, the most important thing is talk to the EPA. Tell them what you really think. That's so important.
All right. Well, with that, I think we're just about out of time. You can go to kboo.fm/waterworld, and I'm going to have all the relevant links up there if you want to do some research. And if you just want to remember one site, then you could just go to www.kboo.fm if you didn't get the others. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. It's been our delight.
The water. PCBs pollute water. Don't wade in the river. Don't wade in the river, children. Don't wade in the river. Industries polluted our river. Weed killer in the river. Toxic sediment, we know it. Phthalates in the river. Superfund toxics in the river. Clean up our water. Clean up our water, you polluters. Clean up our water. You know right to ruin our water. Our beautiful Willamette River. Our
here, to the right-hand speaker.
Is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon.